sign it today. And what number would this have been?
Or will this be? 15?
25.
Yeah, 16.
16?
Yeah, it's 16.
Stop confusing me.
So what is it, 15 or 16?
It's 15.
15.
Okay.
Why is this not working? Ah, here we go.
We have a test today that I feel very unprepared for.
Uh-oh. That's not good.
Your architecture.
Well, that's a Nelson class, so probably you'll be able to wing it.
The thing is I don't really care about the topic either, so like, I don't know if I can even wing it, you know?
Dr. Nelson loves this class.
I really don't understand any of this stuff. This is why I am not going into computers.
Uh-oh. Well, actually, it's a good thing you need to understand that, Hillary. I once made a mistake. The mistake I made was, well, it kind of started like this. When I went to school here, you know, they were just starting computers, and we had an HP 3000, and I learned how to do Fortran on the HP 3000, and there was a whole bunch of job control language, which is, you know, like the operating system thing, and, you know, abort $ old pass, or, you know, run, all this kind of stuff, which, you know, sounds really weird today, but that's, you know, all kind of job control language and stuff you learn. And, you know, at the same time, I got I was just starting school, so I got this fancy TI-59 programmable calculator. You could put little programs into it, you know, and it's kind of like assembly language in a way, you know, really very rudimentary, you know, the kind of the key presses you can program, you know, punch in your thing and get it to do it over and over again. And so, you know, I was also learning how to program on that, and then I kind of like that a little better than the Fortran, because I actually had that device and I could use it wherever I was. And then what happened later was they changed the computer, the main computer on campus, to a VAX. It was 11750, and that's a mini computer, really. And it was better than the HP 3000 as far as speed and stuff, but, you know, it was all anew. It was VAX job control language. And so then I had to learn all that. And then somewhere toward, the middle of the time, my roommate got an Apple II computer. And so it had a thing called AppleSoft, and, you know, Apple II has all the things. It seemed like it was much nicer than, you know, all the other ones, you know. So we programmed on that, and we learned all about how to run that thing. And, you know, and pretty soon my other roommate, his folks were missionaries in Singapore. And in Singapore, they started cloning Apple computers, and you could get pineapples, and you could get, you know, raspberries and other things, you know, but they were just Apple II clones, you know, and they were really cheap compared to Apple, you know. As you know, Apple's always, you know, jack the price up as high as they can. And they've always been that way. I mean, I think in order to really get rich, you have to be able to do that. And I don't know, I'm not one of those kind of guys. I'm too frugal. I just feel terrible when I... But anyway, so then they we learned all about that, and some of the rest of us got some computers. Ralph got these, found a place where you could buy these Apple II motherboards for Europe. But the problem is, for Europe they use PAL instead of NTSC. So the video, we had to do all kinds of modifications. We had lots and lots of wires on the back.
So dumb.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. But that's what happened. And so, you know, we got those things working, but they were, you know, kind of on a piece of plywood like this, and the motherboard bolted down, and he had an old computer keyboards. I think I saw some of those keyboards in Ralph's garage when I was visiting them the other day. And you know, those things were flaky. And man, I spent a lot of time swapping chips and stuff, trying to figure out what was wrong with mine sometimes. You know, it worked great for a while, and then it quit. Ah, it's so disgusting when your computer quits. But anyway, I learned all about that, and we had the whole, you know, there was a book you could buy that had the whole listing of the ROM and the, you know, in assembly language, and it was all commented nicely, and, you know, it was beautiful. And so, you know, when mine booted up, it didn't say Apple II, it said Rob's computer, you know? and all these kind of fun things. Well, then we went, I went to grad school, and Ralph went to grad school, same place, same time. We were actually roommates there. And we had a good time there, but Ralph kind of took a different approach from me. By this time, I was really getting tired. It seems like every time I turned around, everything I learned about computers was obsolete, you know? And it was kind of like, you know, at that point in my life, I'd learned so many of these computers and they'd all been obsoleted, you know? And by that time, I had a different calculator, an HP calculator, ran, you know, different reverse Polish notation instead of, you know, like the TI ones. And it was, you know, I was getting tired of this, you know, learning these man-made protocols that kept getting obsoleted, you know? And, of course, I was also learning a lot of physics stuff and whatnot. And, you know, it seemed like all the physics stuff I learned, it was the same. You know, God made that, and it's all the same. And you know, whenever I learned that, it's you know, I've learned that. It's great, and it doesn't change. And this is really, I thought, man, this is great. I'm just going to concentrate on the, you know, the physics and the mathematics, and I'm going to let the computer stuff kind of slide a little bit. And I didn't take the main class they had there at Purdue, which was for computers. On the other hand, Ralph did. And Ralph took the, and he was programming in C, and they were using a new operating system yet, a Unix, you know, and that was all different, but he got really good at the C and Unix, and I was still using Fortran. I did kind of get used to the Unix after a while, because you kind of had to, it was there. And so, ever after that, Ralph has always been way ahead of me when it came to software. And, you know, what happened was that everything's turning into software. Yeah, sure, I still can do all the electromagnetic fields and stuff. That's really great. But it's not as important now as the software because, you know, you sit down at your computer and you know, and that's how you make things work nowadays. And so it's kind of like that was a mistake. And so now, you know, I've been paying for that, trying to catch up. And it's very hard to catch up once you're behind. Yeah, so, you know, what I'm saying, Hillary, is even though you might not really feel like that's the greatest, you have to realize that so much stuff is turning into that, that you're going to have to kind of bite the bullet. And you did all right in assembly language.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can do languages. It's different. It's not like this stuff. Programming I can do.
Yeah, assembly language is related to that quite a bit. You know, actually, the way it is, you know, the reason the assembly language is the way it is because the way they do that, right? So, anyway, whatever you do, don't make the mistake I did and say, I'm not going to learn this, or I really, you know, this is not my thing, or this is not worth it because I keep having to, you know, dump that knowledge, you know, because every time I've done that, it's come back to bite me. Every single time, I can't think of once it hasn't zapped me somehow, you know. It's kind of like, and sometimes it can cost you a lot of money, too. I mean, I grew up in Alaska, and we had a septic system there. And, you know, somehow I got the idea there that it didn't matter that you pumped your septic system. You know, my whole youth growing up, I never remember them doing that, you know. And then, of course, we bought our own house. And, you know, I thought I knew what I was doing there. I didn't really read up on it or anything. I just thought, yeah, it just kind of works, you know. Well, it does for a while. But, you know, it turns out that if you don't, then the drain field will start plugging up. And you could actually, if you could move out of your house and leave it for a year and then come back a year later, it'd be okay. But that's not a good thing. So, you know, a few years ago I discovered that, you know, our drain field was plugged up. And that can be a real problem because if you don't have a very big lot, then there's no other place for a new drain field and the old one's plugged up, you know. And fortunately for me, it was kind of a funny thing. It was really fortunate for me. Fortunately for me, when our lot was divided off from the neighbor's lot, that they didn't do it right because they didn't really check and see where the septic system for our house went, for the drain field for our house went. And it actually went into the neighbor's yard quite a ways. And so because of that, I mean, it made it so we had to fix the problem right now, but there was still a little room in our yard left for to put another one. But you know, that was like a $6,000 mistake. I didn't learn about that. So anyway, I guess we need a homework here.
He has this book.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, Travis. That's great. Yeah, we need chapter, we're going into chapter 5 today, or we have 6, I guess. Yeah, 6. Okay. B632 and 649.
No, it's not B, it's 649.
Okay, so I decided I'll just let you guys figure out that 9-to-1 Ballin we were doing last day. I mean, at this point, probably it's old news because you're already working or done your lab or mostly done or whatever. So what I want to do is go on to CMOS, okay? This is digital stuff, so this is also kind of the stuff that I didn't emphasize on. I really, you know, I did a little bit of it, but not a lot. And so that's another thing that came back to bite me. But this stuff is extremely important today, okay? The stuff we're going to talk about today is, especially for you guys, you computer engineers and double E's, you know, everything is turning into digital because it's just easier to make a complicated system work digitally. You found out kind of an analog that there are a lot of, it's an art, okay? It's really an art, okay? It's not a logical kind of a thing, totally. There's a lot of stuff, and even things that, you know, experts, you know, can get circuits going and so on, they don't understand everything about all the little, you know, parasitics and whatnot are in that circuit. They have a rudimentary model, and they put it together, and they tweaked on it, and they got it to work, you know, well with this circuit board and so on, and then they sold it. And you know, they did, you know, along, they do have tricks that they use, you know, to make it all kind of work, and you kind of learn those things. But it's not quite the same as digital circuits where you can take in just, you know, complexity. I don't know, you know, on Senior Trip, you remember those guys that, up at and Pullman, the guys who were doing the ASICs and the FPGA code and so on, they said, you know, complexity, oh, that's our ball game, you know. And that's the thing that happens with digital circuits. You can have really complicated setups, okay. But lately, the thing that's really been a problem with digital circuits is the power that they use, okay. And, you know, really, if you think about it, you're really just processing information. And there's no real reason you should have to use much power at all to deal with information, because it's not actually doing work, right? You're just storing it or moving it or that kind of thing. So in your computer, it's, you know, it's basically an information device. And you would like to be able to move that information around fast or to process it quickly and without using a lot of power. The problem, the power becomes, of course, is when you get too much power, your computer, your chip gets too hot, you can't add more transistors there because it's just getting, it won't operate when it gets too hot. And you just add more transistors and they're using more power, it gets hotter. And so, you know, they've kind of, the reason that you haven't seen, you know, for a long time you saw, started out, you know, it was 100 megahertz, then it was 200 megahertz, then 400 megahertz, and 600, and 800, and it went up to about 2 or 3 gigahertz, and then it stopped. Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. And the reason is because the circuits today, they have been optimized as much as we can figure out how at this point, and of course we're always trying to figure out new ways, but they only dissipate power when you are changing state. In other words, when you're going from a high to a low, or a low to a high. And of course, when you're running on a clock, if you're going at 3 gigahertz, you're doing that three million times or billion times a second, right? So that's kind of why what we see today is that the power dissipation is proportional to the frequency of operation of the CPU or whatever the digital circuit is. So what we want to look at today a little bit is how do we do that? And I probably should get this guy going here because I think we'll probably need him. Okay. So, let's look at, first of all, what they call resistor-transistor logic. And this was kind of what they originally did. And it kind of makes sense because originally resistors were cheaper than transistors. Nowadays, I think they're probably transistors are cheaper than resistors. But originally resistors were cheaper than transistors, and this kind of makes sense. So let's look at an inverter. This is the simplest gate. And we'll do the same thing in what we call CMOS, okay? And CMOS was an answer to a problem that we had in RTL. So you can use BJTs or you could use FETs, but one of the things that's better about a FET than a BJT is that it draws no gate current, right? Which is good. That will cut down on the power dissipation, right? So the first thing we'll do is we'll switch from BJTs, you know. I mean, the first RTL would be something like this. This is an inverter here. Plus 5, you know, or whatever, and ground. And we'd have a resistor here like this. Does that make sense?
Could a BJT be made out of silicon?
Yeah, BJTs are made of silicon, yeah.
Oh, no, I mean, like, would they have been able to make them into wafers?
Into a chip, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you can give them plenty of BJT chips. They still put those on ICs. So, you know, you'd have an RB and an RC, and here's your output, you know. So this is VN, and this is VOUT, and these are large signal things because they're logics, right? You know, logic. So you can see how this would work. If I make VN positive here, like plus 5, current will flow down through this resistor in the base, right? Which will make beta times as much flow down here, right? It will put this transistor into saturation, and you'll get a V out of about 0.2 volts or something, right? Does that make sense? So high here, low here. If I put low here, then what happens is the transistor will go into cutoff because there's no base current, right? No base current means no collector current. No collector current means V out 5 volts. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's, this is a BJT inverter. And the disadvantage is we have gate current. Base current, right? It draws current from the logic bit. You know, the what they call the fan out is poor. In other words, you got every one of these, you've had, 100 of these things all connected into the same signal, right? Then you've got quite a lot of current coming from that transistor that's driving that signal, right? And also the power dissipation. Let's think about the power dissipation here. You're going to have some power when the BJT is on. In other words, when we have a low output here, what is the power dissipation? Big or little? I'm going to have a lot of current going through here, right? So when the output is low, we're dissipating a lot of power. On the other hand, when this guy is zero here, then we're not dissipating any power, right? Oh, cool, right? Does that make sense? So we've kind of, half the time we're dissipating power and half the time we're not. So we can make that a little bit better by using a MOSFET here, because first of all, you don't have to use that base resistor. And actually, enhancement mode MOSFETs are probably the best for this. And you just go like this. And you just put a drain resistor up here to plus 5 volts. And this is V in. And here's V out. And you have an RD. And this is, it's a smaller circuit because you got less components. And it dissipates, it takes a current to charge up the gate capacitance. But once you got it charged, it'll just stay there, right? So that's handy. Whereas this one right here, if we were driving this with a high output from the last stage, it's going to be drawing current through RV the whole time, right? So it isn't totally turned off in the state where, if this guy is high and it's driving something else, it could be drawing current, just to hold that state, right? But in this case, right here, once I get this gate charged up to something, then at least the input isn't drawing any current, right? Mm-hmm. Over here, it's going the whole time. So you can see we're kind of moving to a situation where there is some extra power dissipated when you switch, right? Because you got to charge up these capacitances on the gate. Now, the next thing to do in this kind of a thing, really what we're thinking about here, the basic idea behind this is kind of something like this. We just have a resistor here, and there's a switch here, which is, kind of controlled, right, by a voltage. So how do we make that better? This works nicely when the switch is open, but when the switch is closed, we got a problem, right? Yeah, we got power dissipated there, right? And we'd like to get rid of that. I mean, that's half the time we're dissipating quite a bit of power. How could we do that?
How could we avoid that?
Yeah, how could we avoid that? What kind of an idea could we come up with to avoid that? What would work? I mean, well, we need the current to be flowing down here in order to make this output low. This is the output right here. I mean, this is R whatever, right? RC or RD. So well, maybe what we ought to do is think about this. Here's what's really happening in this case, if you kind of think about it. There's made up of two elements here. Even when this thing is closed, how much power is the switch dissipating? It's V times I, right? Voltage across the switch times the current through the switch. So when the switch is closed, the voltage is zero, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the power has to be zero in the switch when the switch is closed. Now when the switch is open, well, there's zero current through it, right? And so in that case, it's also zero power dissipation, right? Whereas a resistor has an I squared R power dissipation, right? So we got to get rid of the resistor. Does that make sense? And what we want to replace it with is what?
Another switch.
Yes, I mean, of course. So what we need is a thing like this. Okay, so we have a switch here, and then we have another switch here, this switch right here. This guy goes down when that guy goes open, right? And they're both controlled kind of by the same thing, right? Like that. So this is what we want right here, isn't it? And here's our output. Does that make sense? Okay, well, I know how to do the bottom part. I'll write that in while you guys are thinking here. You can figure out the top part. I'm going to do the bottom part. Because we already had that, right? So I'm just copying. Okay. I need another switch up here. What can I put up there? Another transistor, right? Another MOSFET, probably, right? Oh, okay. And where would I connect the gate? Where do I want to connect the gate? Yeah, well, we'd really like to make it go to VN, wouldn't we? Right? Okay, so what I want is I want this guy to close when that guy opens, right? And I want this guy to open when that guy closes. What's that? Go the other direction? This guy right here? Greg has an idea. What do you want to do here?
Yeah, use the other kind
of. Oh, a P channel. Yes, yeah. Right here. And where should I put the source? Is this the source or is that the source?
The source.
Top. Yeah, top. Yes. 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 So let's see. So now you see this is VGS for the P channel right here, right? And when I make this guy go positive here, VGS would be zero, would turn off that guy. It would be like open, right? But it would close this guy. That's doing the right thing. Now, if we do it the other way, if I make this guy go to ground, that basically turns off this bet, right? And if I put that to ground, I have a gate here, which is connected to the lowest potential in the circuit, which is going to be just piled up with electrons there, right? It's going to suck all those holes right up next to the oxide, right? And it's going to conduct, right? So now I have, oh, either this or this. Yes, you did it. You figured it out. So this is what we call CMOS. It's complementary because this is a P channel and that's an N channel. And they're MOSFETs, right? So that makes sense, right? And CMOS is what everybody does today, pretty much, okay? There are some other logics. If you need something really fast, there are some other logic families that have some, they use differential signaling usually. And we'll talk about those kind of things sometime later after we've looked at differential amplifiers a little bit more when we do op amps and stuff. But this is probably the main one, and it's the, you know, it works really great. And now we figured out how to do an inverter, we ought to see whether we can figure out how to do like an AND gate or an OR gate, right? Because if we can do an inverter and either an AND gate or an OR gate, then we can do anything, right? And that'd be cool. Okay, so this is a CMOS inverter here, and while I'm writing that up, maybe you can try and figure out how we would do an AND gate and an OR gate. And I would suggest we look at doing switches first, because it kind of makes the steps easier, okay? So. probably put switches. Dissipate no power. Well, actually, in reality, these things, if they could instantly open and instantly close, you wouldn't dissipate any power then either, right? But what really happens here, there is a little bit of power dissipation here, okay? And the power dissipation comes from charging the gates. Because whenever you change the state of BN or M, you're going to have to move charges off this thing and put it onto that thing. And it takes time to move charges off and move charges on. And during the time that you're moving charges off and on, there's a power lost in the gate circuitry. But there's also power lost here, right? Because when you're pulling this guy up and pushing this guy down, in reality, at some point in the middle, there's like a resistance here and a resistance there because there's some current going through there when these things go through the beyond pinch-off region, right? And when it goes through the beyond pinch-off region, while that's happening, you're drawing current through the thing. And you've got voltage across it, and so you dissipate power. So during the switching operation, you do dissipate power, and that's why when you switch fast, that means you're switching often, you're going to have more power dissipated in your processor or whatever it is.
So when you have like billions of those put together.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and they're all, you got the idea. Okay, so how can we make, let's make an AND gate. Or a NAND gate, a NAND gate. Maybe it might be easier.
Two switches.
Yeah, just move the V out down.
I'll put it right above both of them.
Okay, so we got two switches. This one. And this one wants to be controlled. We're going to have two inputs here, right? I'm going to call it A and B, and I want B to control that one, the middle between here, and then I guess I need to say if this guy is going up like this, then I'm going to have an A down here, right, which is going the other way, is that right? And these guys need to be kind of in parallel, is that right? So I got this thing going down to control that switch, and this thing going down to control that switch. Is this right? Let's just see here. Mm-hmm. VCC, or V, I guess in this case, VDD, right? Mm-hmm. VDD. So let's see here. If A turns on, I need both of them on to make this guy high, right? So this guy and this guy will be on in order to make this high. And on, so this is high, it's going to make that. Is this an AND or an AND? This is an AND, huh?
Yeah.
Let's just change this.
Okay. If we switch all the NPNs to PNPs, though, or?
Oh, the P channels to N channels?
N channels, would it be an AND?
I don't think so. You got to put, these have to be P channels up here, and these have to be N channels down here, right? I think I could make an OR gate by putting the parallels up here and the series down here. Is that right? Or maybe that would make an AND gate. Okay, so let's just check and see. Let's make a truth table here. A, B, and B out, okay? Yeah, so let's just kind of see what happens here. If I start 0, 0, 1, or 0, 1, I guess. 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Okay, if A is 0, okay, they're thinking about these things as like voltages kind of over here. If it's 0, I'm going to say that it opens up the thing here. So that will be 0, 0 will give me a high, right? So
both switches be open. If you just set it open to
Well, okay, maybe we better, let's draw this with transistors so we know what we're gonna have here. I'm thinking kinda like this, with P channels here.
Can you explain what the purpose of the bottom two gates is? Why do we need those?
Bottom two switches?
Yes.
Because we get somehow gonna need a low output, otherwise this thing would be floating here, right? And so my idea is if one of these guys up here is open, I want this thing to ground, right? And when they're in parallel, one or the other of them will ground it for me, right? I mean, it's kinda like, it's why do I need the bottom switch here, right? Same idea? Okay, so these are the two on top here, and these are gonna be, have to be PMOS, I think. So, this is VA, and this is VB. Oh, I got it the wrong direction. I'm not used to using PMOS. PMOS FETs in general aren't as good as NMOS FETs. And the other place we use these FETs all the time is kind of in switching operations for things like PWM motors and other kinds of things. And in those cases, there's a parameter of the MOSFET that's very important. It's called RDS on. That's resistance from drain to source when you have the FET turned on, okay? And RDS on for PMOS devices is like 10 or 100 times higher than it is for NMOS devices. So in general, when you're doing motors and other kinds of things that draw a lot of current, you'll probably try and figure out some way to use NMOS devices, even if it's not handy like this. You know, this is very handy to have P and N, right? Because the one voltage controls it all. You didn't have to do anything special. It was just beautiful, right? So anyway, let's see what happens here if I do. Am I doing this right? I'm not even writing a picture right here. It's got to go like this. And these are in. No, not that. Nah, so I need a little doohickey like this, and then like that. And then this guy right here, and then I want to do the same thing over here. And so this is VB. This is VA. Okay, and then V out comes out right here. V out. So we can put VDD here. Now we can kind of look at this thing here, and high, low, and high, low, okay? So if I have A and B both low, that means these guys are both low. That's gonna turn on these guys right here, right? Okay, and so I'm gonna end up with a one up here, right? Because the output will be high. And when these guys are turned on, these guys are gonna be turned off, right? Mm-hmm. Good thing, because if they were turned on, we'd, you know, have a short, right?
But if both, you're making, if the A and B are open, wouldn't that ground be out?
Okay, A and B, these guys are both on, because when I make this guy high right here, make these guys low right here, it makes a voltage between source. First, this one right here first makes a voltage between gate and source right here, right? And that gate and source voltage turns on this guy right here.
Okay.
And when this guy is turned on, then there's a gate and source voltage here, right? Turns on that guy. Okay, and then down here, these guys will both be off because VA is low, so there isn't enough to, you know, there's no channel induced here and no channel induced there, so we got a one. So now let's think about what happens when BA is zero and BB is high. Okay? So VA is zero. So if that turns this guy on right here, right? But the other one's off. And down here, VA is, we said it was zero, right? But VB was high, so that turned on this guy right here, right? And so that made our output zero, right? Now we have a little interesting problem here. Now we're going to turn VA on. Did I just... Okay, so VA is high. So I got 0 volts across here, right? This guy's open. Now we have a problem, right?
We do.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do, because you see, this guy right here is just floating, right?
Yeah.
So how can I fix that? I need a voltage between the channel, you know, the substrate material here, and this aluminum gate here. I need to get a voltage there. How can I do that?
Can I that?
Here we could connect the substrate instead of connecting it up to the source like we normally do. We'll connect it up to here. Okay, make sense? Then everything will work again, right? Because then the thing here isn't like floating. I mean, I can still get a voltage between here and here, right? With this guy disconnected and it going to there, it was just floating there, right? And so I couldn't get a voltage across it, you know. It would just move whichever way I pushed it. Okay, so... So then when we did this, let's see, so what did that do? It does the same thing right here, right? And of course, when they're both high, they're going to have a low here because, you know, this guy's switched down, that guy's switched down, doubly shorted to ground, and these guys are both off, doubly disconnected.
So what did we actually make then?
Yeah, I think we made a NAND, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I guess I better fix this again, right? And it would have been an and if you thought about this A and B, like up here, if A was, you know, like it depends on, you know, what A is doing here.
Wouldn't the NAND be 1110, not 1000?
Okay, so what is this then?
This is broken.
Well, no, this is not broken. This is still something here. What is this?
Oh, it's...
Is it an OR? A NOR?
It's not an OR, but it is NOR.
Okay, so we'll make it an OR, okay? But if we did it one way, okay, so how would we do the other one?
So if we switched the PMOS and NMOS gates, that would be an AND, right?
Yeah, I think if we'd switch the parallel and series, would that be?
Well, what if we only switched the made all of them?
See, the PMOS always have to go to the top. And the NMOS always have to go to the bottom. But you could change you could make this parallel up here and put series down here, right? And I think that would give you the other one, probably.
NAND.
Yeah, NAND, probably, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I just kind of have to draw it up and then make the thing and see what I got. I mean, I can kind of see the idea. I don't want to short all the way through. That's one no-no you never want to do. Unfortunately, you're not going to get that with a P and an N here. That's why the P has to be on top and the N on the bottom. So, now, how much time we got? A little bit of time. We really ought to look at a load line analysis of this whole thing. I don't know. I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to start with a load line analysis of this guy. It's kind of like some of your homework problems. I think you probably had some homework problem like that. I was helping somebody. Was it Daniel or somebody? Yeah. It was a load line analysis of this kind of thing. Okay. We'll quickly run through that. We can do that today. And then we'll look at a load line analysis of this. And this is a more interesting load line analysis over here because you see on this one right here, at least one half of it was our old-fashioned Thevenin, you know, load line. Over here, you know, the resistors are now replaced with, well, I think I'll probably do this one. The resistors are replaced with, you know, one transistor, okay? So you have two transistors, and now you've got, it's the same concept, but you kind of have to bend your mind around, you know, the difficulties of what's happened, because now a resistor is a two-terminal device, the transistor's got a control voltage on it, and And that just makes things even more interesting. But let's do the load line analysis of the RTL. So this, let's look at this RTL load line. Okay, so I'll just draw the circuit here. I'm going to call this VDD. I'll put my RD right here. I'll put the FET right here. And this is VN. And we have V out over here. And so let me draw the curves for VDS. This is VDS right here. And this is ID here. And I'm going to assume there's no current going out this because it's connected to another gate, which is, you know, I'm not going to draw any current, okay? So this is ID here. And these things, you know, we had this is for cutoff right down here. That's what it looks like in cutoff. All right, down no current. And then we have, you know, VGS a little bit beyond V threshold. This line here is VGS less than or equal to V threshold, right? You didn't turn on the FET yet, right? Then you turn on the FET a little bit, you know, so this will be VGS equals, say, VTH, say, plus one or something, right? And then it's going to go up like this, and that'll be VGS equals V threshold plus 2. And then it goes up even bigger. I mean, I probably should even move it up further, but I'll leave that right there. This is VGS equals V threshold plus 3. And it really it starts out and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's a squared kind of a thing, okay? So this is the IV characteristic of the transistor. Now we need to get the IV characteristic for the resistor. That's the load. This is the load up here. That's the source. So if I steal one of my pens over here, make a little note, what's the load and what's the source? This thing right here, that's called the source. And this dude up here, this is the load. Okay, so there's the load and the source. And so there's the ID and the BDS have to be on the line for the source, and there is an equation that will give us the line for, I mean, the curve for the load. I mean, and you know, I don't know. maybe I've got this backwards here. Really, I think. Yeah, I don't know. It makes more sense in some ways to say that this is. It includes VDD here, really. And maybe I should call that the source, but I think they call this line, that's the equation for that guy, they call it the load line, okay? But this, so if we do a loop around here, you can say we've got minus VDD, or maybe I'll just write I, it's easier if I just write I. I don't have to do any algebra here. ID. The current here is just equal to VDD minus VDS over RD. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And so I could write that as equals minus 1 over RD times VDS plus VDD over RD. And so I've got in a line, it's an equation of a line. This is VDD over RD is the y-intercept, and down here is the x-intercept, which is V VDD. In other words, if I make I equal 0, that says VDS has to equal VDD, right? And the slope here, going on this line, going from this to that, the slope here is minus 1 over RS. So they call this thing the load line here. Really, it's more like the source line, okay? Because it's the one that has the source in it, right? And, you know, you could do the same thing with, instead of a transistor in here, you could put a resistor in here. You got the voltage divider. You're going to have this line right there from the Thevenin part of the source, and then the load would be a line going up like this, and the place they cross is the voltage divider. You know, it tells you the voltage and the current through the voltage divider, okay? So this is, you know, load line analysis, and what we want to do next day is we want to take and play this same game, only replace this RD with a transistor, which means this line right here, you know, the one that comes from a Thevenin circuit, is now going to be actually a transistor curve. It's going to be some one of these kind of things, except it's for the P channel, right? So maybe down like this, and we've got to figure out how that superimposes on this graph and where are the, where does it cross? You know, this is the solution right here for VGS equals V Thevenin threshold plus 2, right? Does that make sense? And the solution up here, that would be if you made VGS equal V threshold plus 3, and down here is the threshold, you know, if it's VGS is less than V threshold, right? Does that make sense? So you can see how it goes from here it is down here, where you have VGS less than V threshold, that's a high output, you get VDD out, and over here you get, you know, a low output. Not completely zero, but, you know, 2/10 of a volt or something. So next day we'll try and do this more complicated thing by replacing that with a transistor. Yeah, but it's hard to get ones that have, in fact, the same MOSFET will have, you know, same variety of MOSFET, you know, like a 2 in 7002 or something.
Yeah.
It'll have a very wide range of threshold voltages. And that makes this whole thing like, you know, oh man, what a headache. I wish this was exactly this, then everything would be easy.
The same issue of having different betas.
Yes, the same issue, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We got lucky, most of them were pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a case that you'll find a lot that they'll work pretty close a lot of the times?
If they're on the same chip, they're usually, it's kind of like when you bake the cookies, you know, you put them on the same cookie sheet, and if one of them's burned, they're probably all burned, right?